This is Issues and Ideas on 90.1 FM KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Kim Bischoff. There are lots of ways to get around the Central Coast. You can drive, carpool, ride a bike, take a bus, and of course walk. At the end of 2014, the city of San Luis Obispo set new transportation mode goals that would decrease car travel and increase biking, walking, and transit. Here to explain how the city is working to meet those goals is San Luis Obispo's Public Works Director, Daryl Grigsby. Welcome to Issues and Ideas, Daryl.
Thank you, Kim.
So city government is something of a mystery to those of us who don't actually work in the system. So let's start with some civics 101 here. Public Works is an organization that affects our lives in so many ways. Can you talk a little bit about that? Tell me what Public Works does, what you do over there.
Okay, indeed I can. So Public Works is a fairly common term that's used in municipal government to talk about basically the department that's in charge of the public's infrastructure. The way I like to see it is basically Public Works is in charge of anything that's in the public right-of-way. So the sidewalks, the bike paths, the street signal system, the street system itself, any bridges, and so physical facilities like that. And then in addition, in San Luis Obispo, what's particular about ours that's different than many is we run the parking division, so the three parking structures downtown and all the meters that the people use. And then we also run the transit system, so slow transit is a section within the Public Works Department. And then we also manage the we maintain the recreation portion, but we maintain all the city's parks and the Sinsheimer pool.
Okay.
And the Sinsheimer Stadium.
So in partnership with Parks and Rec?
Now, the Parks and Recreation runs the recreational programs out of there, and then our staff maintains all those
facilities.
So it is a partnership, indeed,
between
the two departments, yeah.
So it sounds like transportation is a pretty big part of what Public Works manages.
It is a big part of it. In fact, we have a transportation division that's in charge of the signals and the circulation studies and any traffic studies, neighborhood traffic calming. So yeah, transportation is a big part. In fact, for most people, when they think of Public Works, they think of transportation just because it's the most visible component of it.
So in December 2014, the city passed this land use and circulation elements known also by the acronym LUCE. And I believe that was the first time in 20 years that there was an update?
That's correct, yes, for that portion of it.
Can you talk a little bit about the LUCE? What was the process, and what does it mean for people who live here?
So it was a pretty extensive public process, Kim, and our community development department actually ran the public component of it. We were, I would say, in Public Works kind of advisory and assistant to community development, but they really ran with the process. So basically, every city has a general plan, and it kind of outlines their growth patterns for the next 15 to 20 years. And for the city of San Luis Obispo, we had to update our land use and circulation element. And really, what that was intended to do was to make sure that the future land use patterns in the city, in terms of growth for residential, commercial, industrial, et cetera, that all those patterns, as they develop, there would be adequate and sufficient transportation networks as part of it. So that's why they call it the land use and circulation element, because really those two go hand in hand.
Even though they're two separate documents.
That's exactly
and two separate
right.
Set of,
that's
sets
exactly
of
right. And really, as people know, I mean, land use kind of drives transportation needs.
Right,
for
sure.
Example, if there's a lot of growth out in the outer parts of a city or a county, that just means people's commutes are longer.
Mm-hmm.
So really one of the principles of the land use and circulation element was to make sure that the land use that as it developed in the city of San Luis Obispo was close to and could be served by transportation corridors, not just for the automobile, but for transit and for biking and for walking. And so that's where, you asked about the public process. There was an advisory committee that the council worked with. I think they had probably 46 meetings, and then they had the sessions called Focus on the Future held at the mm-hmm. public library where people gave input. So it's quite an extensive public process.
Sure.
And that resulted in the final council decisions in 2014 to approve the land use and circulation element.
Okay. Now, one part of the circulation element is this these mode share goals. And I tried to find the exact numbers, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw that their targets were 50% motor vehicles, 12% public transit, 20% bicycles, and 18% walking, carpools, and other forms.
That's right.
Does that sound
those
right
are the right numbers. Yep, those are the right numbers.
Now, how does that compare to what we currently have?
So now that's a good question, because there are lots of ways to measure each one of those. I will say just quickly, right now we don't know exactly where we are on any of those, but we are the Public Works Department for this spring and summer. We're doing traffic studies to see where our mode share goals are right now.
Okay.
We do know, I mean, just generally, we know that we're not achieving those, which is why they were set forth as goals. Typically, if you look at mode share goals around any American city, particularly those in California, the car, single occupant car is up at around 70 or 80%. I'm not saying that's what the goals, that's not what the ridership here is. But so that's kind of where we're starting at. But we'll know more about where we are in terms of the actual numbers. I do know that when we looked at the goals, the goal that we're closest to in terms of our mode share is the pedestrian one.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of pedestrian activity. And the other, why I say this is tricky, is a lot of measurements only measure the peak hour trips that people take, because that's what people think of as the rush hour, but really the land use and circulation element, and these goals represent all trips. So the idea is not just for work trips, but also for school and for pleasure and for leisure,
okay,
that people would shift more toward the single occupant vehicle to transit and biking and walking.
Now, when you say you're doing surveys, I have this image of city staffers sitting at intersections with a clipboard and tally marks. How do they count how people get around?
So there's a couple of ways, and that's a good question. That the way you describe is one way. That is, and in fact, there's a board. We had it this past May for Public Works Week. Our traffic division showed our, and I don't know what the name of it is, but there's a board that a person literally sits at and records each movement of every vehicle and every pedestrian and every bus and every cyclist. That's one way of doing it. And then we also just got this device, which I also don't know the name of it, but people may see it around town, but there's a black box on the ground, and up from that box is an antenna, which is actually making the counts for traffic. We're going to be using that.
Oh, wow.
And then the other thing we frankly use is the, there's a lot of census data where people have to report their commute patterns,
right,
and there are other surveys that people fill out. So we're going to take all that information to feed into our counts to see exactly where we are in the city of San Luis Obispo.
Okay. To your knowledge, are there cities in the U.S. that have something close to what we're shooting for?
There's a lot of cities that take pride in their efforts to promote particularly cycling. I think that's the one that a lot of transportation people feel like has the most potential, only because the bicycle enables you to go a farther distance.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have control over it, unlike the bus.
Right.
I mean, the bus, you're kind of restrained by the schedule. So there's a lot of cities that have done a lot with bicycles, and I would say the ones that are most proud of themselves is probably Portland, Oregon. They have a pretty aggressive bicycle program, and then Davis in California, of course,
sure,
has a fairly aggressive program as well.
Now, 20% seems high to me. Isn't the national average somewhere around 2?
For cycling, the national average is around 2 and 4.
Okay.
It depends on the community, but it is around between 2 and 4%. Now, what I think I do know that our mode share for the for bikes right now for peak hour trips is about 6%.
Oh, wow.
And which is fairly good.
Mm-hmm.
But what we don't know are the trips that people take on the time that are non-peak. You know, to me, the thing that's exciting about the whole transportation element and the public's involvement is really, I mean, to me, transportation is where there's really a partnership between the public and the city.
Sure.
Because the city provides the services, but people have to want to use them and, in fact, demand more, which I think kind of creates a healthy cycle where if you have a healthy pedestrian and bike and transit community that demand more services, the city provides it, and then they use it, and then it just is a self-fulfilling cycle that increases the ridership.
Sure. I noticed that around the same time, the city created a policy that allocates transportation funding according to the mode share percentage goals. So does that mean that during this time period, for every 50 cents that's allocated for motor vehicle projects, 20 cents will get allocated for bike projects?
That's totally correct.
That's so interesting. So I would think that bike projects, for instance, are a lot cheaper.
Yes. And so now here's, now, Kim, I have to say, I was really nervous about that.
Okay.
In terms of how it could would actually be implemented, only because, I mean, when we allocate our dollars, we allocate them toward projects, and we haven't been looking at a percentage going to a certain mode
right.
share. So admittedly, I was a little bit nervous about how this was going to work out. We did, however, do a test run in the last financial plan adopted last June for the 15-17 financial plan to see what, for this upcoming year, what the split would look like. And amazingly, to get to your point about cycle projects being not as expensive, we actually had a greater percentage. I think the 20% called for there, I think we achieved 27%, if I remember my numbers right.
Now, does that speak to what you're talking about in terms of momentum? The more bike facilities you have, the more demand you have from the community?
Yeah, definitely. And we also benefited, admittedly, from the Railroad Safety Trail project, which is to extend the trail that goes by Cal Poly southward toward downtown. We got an active transportation grant for that, so that's $3.5 million. So that counted for a
sure.
lot. And then the other thing, to be totally honest about, like for the Los Osos Valley Road project that we just finished, that a lot of people would say, well, that's a single occupant vehicle project, but really we added sidewalks where there hadn't been any sidewalks,
right.
and we added bike lanes where they were substandard. So of that project cost, for the portion that crossed over the freeway, we were able to allocate that portion of that project toward bike and pads.
It's a much nicer crossing experience now for anyone in a car or on a bike or on foot.
That's right. That's right. And when I go, when I'm in that area, I almost always see somebody walking or riding across that bridge, whereas before, if you saw somebody up there, you knew it was dangerous because
sure.
I've done both up there and there wasn't enough room before.
No, it made everybody nervous.
Yeah.
So what are some factors that get people to take those peak trips, especially less by car and more by bike, bus, or walking?
Well, I think one of the things that studies have shown that people respond to is a separated bike path. I mean, and that's known as a class one bike path. So in the lingo, class one is a separated bike path that's away from traffic.
So that would be like the Bob Jones Trail and Railroad Safety
that's
Trail.
That's exactly right. Bike riders, you can divide, and I'll just talk about bikes for a second. But bike riders, you know, you can kind of put into two categories. There are people that will ride in traffic no matter how heavy or how tight the bike lane is. And then there are others who don't ride as often and want a little more margin of safety. And that first group is probably a smaller group. And there are more people who like to ride but don't want to be out in busy traffic. So one of the key features is having separated bike paths. So the city's bicycle transportation plan, which the council adopted in 2013, puts focus on both the Bob Jones Trail and the Railroad Safety Trail as really the kind of the two main links that will enable people to be off the facility. So that's one. And then just the perception of safety.
Mm-hmm.
At a state level, they're trying to pass the laws around having a 3-foot rule so the bike has 3 feet between themselves and the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the two biggest issues for biking, especially, is having facilities that are separated from traffic and also a perception of safety. And I'll just say quickly, on a perception of safety issue, one thing that studies also show is no matter what kind of facility is available, the more bikes that use it, the safer the biking experience, because cars get used to seeing bikes there.
Sure.
So the worst thing for cyclists is to be the only person out on the roadway.
Right, because then drivers aren't expecting to see you there.
That's exactly right.
It's harder for them to adjust.
That's exactly right.
That makes sense.
And then on the transit end, it's just a matter of knowing that you can use the bus. I mean, a lot of people just are not aware of the transit system and where it goes and what times. So you have to, you know, do a little research to see if the bus works for you. And on the pedestrian end, I would say one of the obstacles is people's perception of distance, because the average person, a healthy person, can walk 20 minutes. In 20 minutes, they can go, I believe it's a mile. You go 3 miles an hour.
Right.
That's right. 3 miles an hour you can walk. So if you have the time, if you drew a circle around your house and showed where you can walk in 3 miles away, it's a pretty big circle.
Right.
But most people don't think, oh, my goodness, I can walk that way. So I was at another city where we had a pedestrian education session where we had people come put their house on a map, and then we did a circle to show where they could walk. And it was a good way to just display how they could access their neighborhood by walking.
That makes sense. Can we go back to transit for a minute?
We can.
I've lived in bigger metropolitan areas, and I did get around by bus there. I'm embarrassed to say I have never once taken the bus in Slo County. And my perception is that, you know, there are big window, you know, big gaps of time in between buses that go where I'm going. And so it requires some planning. Is that one of those critical mass type things as well, where the more people if more people use the bus, then transit route frequency will increase?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely that is. And here's the thing that's interesting about San Luis Obispo. I mean, really, our transit system is fairly vibrant for a city this size. And it's mostly, a lot of it has to do with Cal Poly,
mm-hmm.
because, Cal Poly is about half of our ridership on slow transit. And we also have two transit systems. So slow transit operates in the city, and we have six routes that operate in the city. And then the RTA, Regional Transit Authority, operates in the county, and they connect all the way from San Simeon down to Napomo.
Wow.
And so actually to Santa Maria, I think they have a run that goes there. So between those two systems, they serve a lot of area. But you're right, Kim, there are gaps of time. And I will just say, if you look at transportation, I mean, the car definitely is the most efficient. If you're looking just at time, the vehicle is the most efficient way to get around.
Right.
But if you can moderate and plan your schedule around that, these other modes, to me, are just a lot, in the long term, healthier for you. I mean, because those studies that talk about the more time you're behind the wheel of a car, the less healthy you are as a person, just because you're not moving like you would be if you were walking or biking or even catching a bus. Because a bus trip tends to have a lot of pedestrian activity with it.
Sure. It's fun. The people watching is great. The experience of not having to think while you're in a vehicle that's moving is great.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How can individual citizens get involved in this process? Like at what point in projects developing and being implemented is citizen input welcome?
Well, I would say there's probably two fundamental ways. I mean, one way is they can just, if they have a particular issue or area they want to have addressed or at least looked at by staff, they could call the Public Works Department or send in on our website. We have a report a problem. You can say, here's where I think this can be an area improved. I mean, obviously we can't respond to everything that people call in about, but it does, like, for example, if we get a preponderance of calls about a particular area or intersection that people are concerned about, you know, that could raise it in the priority list.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say one way is to just call in. A second way, I would say there's three. And the second way is to go to the community forum, which we have every January, I believe it is, before the budget is adopted in the summer. And we only do that every 2 years because we have a two-year budget. So we have a community forum where people can come and talk about what their major priorities are. And in fact, that's how one of the major city council goals for this year is multimodal transportation. And that's because people came to the meeting and said, we want more bikes and peds and transit. So that actually has resulted in the city having a whole host of projects behind that major city goal. So that community forum is a way, and just calling in. And another way is just come to the council meeting.
Sure.
Is if you have an issue that people, particularly if it's a more global issue, then that way the council can address it as a policy. Because there was, for example, during the budget, and of course people could come just at the budget hearing and ask for things, because we actually increased our investment in bikes based on testimony that people gave to the council, and the council agreed to increase the money for small spot improvements around the city.
When is the next budget forum? You talked about the one that happens every 2 years.
Yeah, so we are now in our, so we have this, our budget is, that we're in right now is a 15-17. So let me see, can I get this straight? So this summer, we're doing our supplemental, and then in the January of 2017 will be our next committee forum.
Okay.
And that will be for the budget of 2017 and 2019.
Those meetings are really satisfying as a citizen. You get the sense that people who work in the city are really listening to what everybody's saying. And you see visual evidence that people have interests in certain areas, and the prioritization process seems really open.
Yeah, it's, to me, I think it's a great example of where you can see, like you're totally right, Kim, a pretty straight line between public input, council adopting funding for a project, and then that project actually happening. I mean, to me, the skate park is an example of that for sure. And this, the increase in bike facilities, a lot of the green bike lanes that you see around town, and the sharrows around town, which are the legends that show a bicycle, that show a bike can have that space in the street. I mean, a lot of that is because of the additional money that council approved during the budget review from last time.
So the city, partly in that process, prioritized bike facilities or multimodal transportation, and that led to the passage of the Luce.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And so now we have these goals, these targets, and I assume the target date is 2035.
Yes, that's right.
What happens if we don't meet them?
Well, you know, the city set those goals. You're talking about the actual mode split objectives that we set. You know, there's not a legislative mandate from the state or anything that said you have to meet these goals. I mean, I think it was basically the city saying, here's how we want our community to be in the future. I think the practical consequences of us not meeting those goals is we'll have a lot more vehicular traffic on the street, and we would have a lot more congestion and a lot more traffic delays. So in terms of the actual day-to-day life of how we live, I think it would have an impact, but it's not, there wouldn't be any kind of penalties from the state or anything.
Okay, all right. Now, I did notice that you rode your bicycle here to the studio to talk with me today.
Yes, I did.
Have you found that in your personal life you are trying to serve as a role model and advocating for alternate mode shifts? Do you go to dinner parties and nudge your friends to try taking the bus?
Oh, yeah, I do. You know, I've actually been commuting by bike since in San Diego in 1977, and then I commuted by bicycle in Seattle for 18 years. And, you know, I just feel, not everybody can make it work in their life, because if you have a lot of obligations, if you're taking care of your parents or kids, have a couple jobs, it doesn't work. But I feel like there are a lot of people for whom the bicycle can make, maybe not even every day, but just a way to say, see, let me see if I can make it. And I just find an obstacle that people have is just not knowing the route, knowing how long it would take. So it's just a matter, I feel like, having a bike buddy just to show you how it can happen. And like I say, Kim, you don't have to do it every day, but I got into biking because I saw somebody ride, and they were always happy and healthy.
That's right.
And so I said, well, shoot, why shouldn't I try to do that?
Makes sense to me. Well, if you're interested, you can find the entire text of the land use and circulation elements online at slow2035.com. That's slow2035.com. Daryl, thank you so much for joining us on Issues and Ideas.
Oh, thank you, Kim. I totally enjoyed it. Thanks.
This is Issues and Ideas on 90.1 FM KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Kim Bischoff.